Thank you for being with us again today here at the Covenant of Grace Prayer Line. And we're continuing in our Bible study series. We have been studying in the book of the Song of Solomon in our studies in our shepherd groups. And we finished those up and we are about to go into 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. But as a review, I'm going to go through and do an audio series on the book of the Song of Solomon, just like I did previously with the books of Job and Ecclesiastes. I'm going to first tie in some preliminary or introductory notes for your background of study for this book. According to 1 Kings 4:32, King Solomon composed 1,005 songs. Many Bible scholars assume that the Song of Solomon, this book we're looking into, sometimes called the Song of Songs, is one of these songs. Whereas the Songs of Solomon probably covered a broad range of themes, this song is specifically about love. Romantic love for the most part, and yet there's other trajectories it takes, or typology we can look into. It portrays love's subtlety and mystery, its beauty and its pleasures, its captivation and enchantment, its elusiveness and as well its spontaneity. It reveals the romantic feelings of a woman for a man and a man for a woman. The Song of Solomon also portrays the power of love. In fact, this book is about the power of love, and there's no rival to it, even though death is considered something of a factor in this book. Thus, one of the main lessons to be learned from the study of the Song of Solomon is that God intends for powerful love to be a hallmark of the marital relationship between a man and woman, and that love trumps so many things in life that could get the best of us or could knock us off track, and love can conquer all. The author and the date, let's consider. It seems most reasonable to accept Solomon as the God-inspired composer, especially since the title refers to Solomon by names in the Song of Solomon, verse 1 and 1. In fact, his name appears many times throughout the book, verse 5 in chapter 1, 3, 7, and verse 9 there, and verse 11 as well in chapter 3. In chapter 8, it's in verse 11 and 12, I believe. In this light, Bible scholars generally agree that Solomon most likely wrote this song to celebrate his wedding to one of his 700 wives. Now, not too many people could afford 700 wives, but Solomon did. And there were multiple wives, it seems, in many portions of Scripture, considering the Scripture, in the Old Testament. But the more so we get into the New Testament, we do not see that kind of practice in order. There are some who question Solomon's authorship of the book, arguing that the real author used Solomon's name to give prestige to his work. They follow various lines of reasoning to suggest that Solomon could not have written this book, such as pointing to the, let's say, the presence of some rare words. However, these lines of reasoning are not convincing to most scholars. As for when the book was written, there's a little bit of uncertainty to its authorship there, but yet it is divided over when it is composed and considered a book that was written probably in the late 4th or 3rd century B.C. But since it is most reasonable to accept that Solomon was the composer, the date seems just as clear. The song would have been written probably in the middle of the 10th century B.C. Solomon's reign extended from about 970 to 930 B.C., so somewhere in that time period. Various interpretations or ways to interpret this book we can look at here for a moment, or I would like to look at for a moment. Both Jewish and Christian theologians have held the Song of Solomon in high esteem, though perhaps no other book of the Old Testament has been subjected to so many different interpretations, ways and lights of looking into it and considering its scriptural expertise and considerations of personal life and love. But there are three basic approaches we can consider today. The Song of Solomon has often been taken as allegorical, In this interpretation, the lovers in this song are viewed not as historical figures, but as symbolic characters. I've seen that from a variety of Christian theologians, I will say. Jewish interpreters, who took the allegorical approach, have seen the characters as representing God and Israel, while Christian interpreters have seen them as representing Christ and the church. And at times, even in my ministry, I've done that and talked about that depth of love and in considering of Christ for his bride, the church. A somewhat related interpretation sees the Song of Solomon as a typological book. In other words, the characters in this song are accepted as historical, but their love is taken to also illustrate the love of God as for his people. Christians have seen in the love relationship between the young bride and the groom, the love that Jesus, the bridegroom, has for the church, his bride. And as I've told you, that's one of the things that many times I've heard or I have actually talked about that love in consideration of the church and the bridegroom. When taken at its face value, the natural or literal interpretation, this song appears to portray an actual case of romantic love. This is the interpretation that our Bible study series will primarily look into. Even though we might follow lines and depart at times into the typological or even allegorical for a sense of understanding and clarity. In this view, the book's inclusion in the Bible constitutes a statement about romantic love. God made us with a capacity for romantic love, and that kind of love is a good thing, in fact, a beautiful and marvelous thing when expressed within proper bounds and within covenantal relationship. Of course, this interpretation does not preclude the author's use of metaphorical language, in which a word or phrase that ordinarily designates one thing is used to designate another. Thus, when the author referred to physical appearance, he may also have been focusing on character, personality, and so on. So remember that as we study that and as we did in our shepherd groups, that sometimes it's focusing upon the character, personality, and so on. Now the characters, the plot and the characters. And then I'm going to kind of break it down for you a little bit at a glance. The plot and the characters we'll be looking at. There is no clear plot in the Song of Solomon as there would be in a play or a story. Interpreters have suggested several different storylines. For instance, some interpreters say that the book presents a love triangle. A beautiful peasant girl and a shepherd were in love with each other, but the girl was forced to join King Solomon's harem. While there are some things to be said for that analysis of the plot, our Bible study series takes the view that the poem shows the love between King Solomon and one of his wives, a real jewel to him. The poem contains a cluster of five meetings in which the lovers pass through courtship, their wedding, the consummation of their love and marriage, and occasions after marriage in which they renew their love. According to this analysis of the action, there are three sources of speeches in the poem. The bride, her attendants, and the groom. The bride, her attendants, and the groom. Well, her name is never mentioned, and that's a curious thing about the book, that her name is never mentioned. The bride is identified as a Shulamite woman in verse 13 of chapter 6. It is not clear whether this identification refers to her place of birth, her actual name, or perhaps both. We're not sure. While some interpreters have suggested that she was Egyptian, the daughter of a pharaoh, others point to verse 6 of chapter 1 to argue that she was a peasant girl. Also appearing in the song are some young maidens who apparently are friends of the bride. Some interpreters believe these girls were actually some of the other women in Solomon's harem. Another interpretation has it that they were merely onlookers from Jerusalem. From time to time, they converse with the bride. Their lines in the song are brief, however, and are usually either questions for the bride or responses to what she has spoken. The other main character of the song is, of course, King Solomon. We get glimpses of his palace and pageantry and lands. We can really get a visual picture of it all through this book. This great king of Israel had many wives and concubines, yet he expressed great love and admiration of his beloved. And this woman was a jewel in his court and special to his heart. He joined with her in marriage and renewed his love for her afterwards. It seems as though with this woman, he truly had a captivating covenant relationship in such a way and constantly was going back to renew that love. Now, here's the Song of Solomon at a glance, if you will. First, the title. It's the Song of Songs, or the Solomon's Song of Songs. And we find that in chapter 1, verse 1. The first meeting, the beauty of love. The first meeting, the beauty of love. Chapter 1, verses 2 through chapter 2, verse 7. Okay, then the second meeting, the call of love. Chapter 2, verse 8 through chapter 3, verse 5. Then the third meeting, the approach of love. Chapter 3, 6 through chapter 5, verse 1. And then the fourth meeting, the readiness of love. Chapter 5, verse 2 through chapter 6, verse 3. Then the fifth meeting, the answer of love, chapter 6, verse 4 through 8, chapter 8, verse 4. And then the conclusion, the seal of love. Even as we are sealed in our relationship to God through the Holy Spirit, this covenant seal of love between the Shulamite woman and Solomon are talked about in chapters 8, 5 through 14. The first thing considered in this study is the courtship of the lovers. And that is the truth about any relationship and the courtship and how many brides and how many husbands speak about those early meetings and what brought them together and the early courtship and how that person was wooed by that person. It's a wonderful time period of expression and love, kindness, setbacks, etc. But yet love prevails. If you look at Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 4, it reads, "We rejoice and delight in you. We will praise your love more than wine. How right they are to adore you." Solomon's Song of Songs, verses 1, is a collection of brief poems about love and marriage. And verse 4 there deliberates concerning love and praise and adoration. It is a love poetry in a powerful world setting. Throughout these poems are the words from three sources. First, the young Shulamite bride, who talked about her love boldly and openly, evoking the innocence of the love between Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, Genesis 2, 24 and 25. And second is the groom, apparently King Solomon, who candidly expressed his joy and admiration for his new bride. Third is a group of the bride's friends. The mention of these young Jewish maidens throughout the Song of Solomon signifies that the commitment made by a man and woman is not solely a private one, but a public one as well. What a couple commits to in their marriage vows will affect others in society, and others need to understand their actions as well in the covenant relationship. Many times when I counsel a couple considering marriage, I will not consider counseling them until I have spoken first with the parents, and even sometimes some of the siblings, because of what I know about the relationship and how they will have impact in that person's relationship. Because so many times the actions and reactions, support mechanisms of parents have so much to play with in consideration of that couple. And if they do not allow that couple to blossom, that couple to be a couple and to fuse together despite whatever differentiation there might be, there can become a cataclysmic situation that develops because of preference. Oh, you know, just leave him because, you know, he doesn't really love you, or this and that, you know, these games that are played. And I ask parents to stick to their own lives, etc., support, but do not bend or break or try to exacerbate problems. And if I don't sense that and see that, I even warn the couple of what I see coming down the road. I think it's wisdom. Ask yourself today, how have other people's marriages had an effect on me? Okay, How has other people's marriages affected me? How has it affected you? How have others in their relationships had impact upon you? Why was this book called Solomon's Song of Songs? Why was it called that? The phrase in the Hebrew simply means that this song was the greatest of all the songs, this book of Song of Songs, or Song of Solomon. One Bible translator rendered the phrase as Solomon's sublime song. In the opening lines of the actual song, chapter, verses 2 through 4, the young woman expressed her joy aloud and called out anxiously to her betrothed to come away with her. Thus, she was the first character to speak. So, in this relationship, the woman was the first one who initiated a relational kind of dialogue and waited for the response. She seemed to feel she was on an equal footing with her betrothed. This element of the song probably helped make it unique in a culture mostly ruled by men. Okay, her coming about and saying this. I was watching a little while ago, there is a new series on television. I believe it's called The Crown. No, it's not that. It's the one about Victoria. I'm sorry, not The Crown, but about Victoria. And the lady who is to be betrothed to Albert is the one who initiates the question about marriage and would you marry me? And in a lot of cultures, that is not an accepted norm. But being the queen, et cetera, she felt that she could do so. But as well, it helped because he was kind of, in a sense, not sure where she was or where her heart was. And sometimes when you are not sure about that person's heart or where they are, being the one who initiates, whether man or woman, does not matter. What's important is that you do. Because love can be lost when there is no chance to convey those feelings, consider the aspects of marriage or whatever, and to begin to communicate about it. Many people have told me about how they lost their love or et cetera because they weren't strong enough to just say what they wanted to say or converse the way they wanted to converse or ask the questions they were. And they kicked themselves. And yet, you know, there comes a time and a point where you have to put that aside to move on. But if you're at that place in your relationship with someone or you're considering marriage or you're in an engagement period, who says it? Who does it doesn't matter. But that the questions are asked, the considerations are there, that an openness in a dialogue is formal and proper and intimate in all capacities is so important in its trajectory. The woman wanted her groom to declare his love for her physically by kissing her. As she pondered his kiss, she described his love as more delightful than wine in verse 2. Wine was frequently associated with intimacy and with special celebrations in ancient Hebrew culture. Indeed, wine is referred to 8 times by the characters in the Song of Solomon. Linking her thoughts of her groom with the fine fragrance of perfumes, she then remarked that his name was like perfume poured out. Her reverence for his name indicates that the man was a person of stature, so much so that all the other maidens in the realm love him. Verse 3. And the bride was evidently in a hurry. She wanted her groom to take her away immediately. Then she gave the first indication of just who her groom was. After asking to be taken away, she petitioned, "Let the king bring me into his chambers." Most Bible interpreters throughout history have believed that the king she was referring to was Solomon. Hence, he was the bridegroom and the focus of all the young woman's attentions. The second speech in the song comes from young maidens who were probably friends of the bride, These girls rejoiced and took delight in the friend's bridegroom. Indeed, they considered the couple's love to be more praiseworthy even than wine. Their relationship was such that there was envy, that there was, understanding amongst the maidens and others of this blossoming love that seemed to be there between the king and the Shulamite woman. After hearing the rejoicing of her attendants, the young bride restated how the king had earned the adoration of the maidens, and then expressed her anxiety. She felt self-conscious about being dark-skinned, and yet at the same time, she was confident of her beauty. She compared herself to the tents of Kedar and the tent curtains of the king. By doing so, she may have been indicating that she was from Kedar, a Bedouin territory southeast of Damascus, where tents were made of skin of black goats. "Stop staring at me," the young woman insisted in verse 6. She was dark, she explained, because her brothers had made her work in the vineyards, out in the sun. By spending so much time laboring for her brothers, she was forced to neglect her own vineyard, her body. Turning her thoughts back to her groom, she asked where she could find him as he cared for his sheep. She clearly wanted to be near him, but in joining him, she did not want to give the wrong impression by appearing before him veiled like a prostitute or something. Love to her was a great deal more than mere sexual gratification. She wanted her husband to be unselfishly loving her, and she unselfishly loving him. Answering the bride's inquiry, the young maidens of Jerusalem gave her directions on how to find her groom by following him to the pastures. They addressed her as the most beautiful of women, verifying her attractiveness in verse 8. They would repeat this description of her later in chapter 5, verse 9 and 1. So begins our study. So in consideration, we view this young couple and their developing intimate relationship and how it blossoms. As we see first her asking the question, him responding, her having her doubts because of her appearance being darker skinned, and then the maiden speaking so highly of the appearances of things, considering the love of this couple, one for another. So this begins our chapter and verses of study considering the book of Song of Solomon. And I pray that God will bless you, and that as we look into this, we'll consider our relationships, we'll consider the church, we'll consider our love for God, and we'll look at some of these statements and these activities and some of the goings on between this couple, and we'll consider ourselves and what's going on in our lives, and hopefully begin to grow in our relationships where we have those who we care for in agape love, whether it's husband and wife, whether it's friends and neighbors, whether it's children, etc. And we give of ourselves unselfishly as this couple wanted to, and how this bride wanted to between her husband and herself. Okay? Unselfish love. And that's something we really want to talk about in the next few days. God bless you, and thank you for being with us today on the prayer line.